The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Thursday Happier Happy Hour. I'll be entirely happy when our pal Jim Santel joins. I hear you screwed it up. Dominic!
Dominic! It was me! It was all me. Sorry, Jim. I did send you the new link once you get to it. Jim Santel, our friend, former U.S. attorney, will join us here in a few minutes. That's all on me. State, you never give me any responsibility other than like turning the mics on.
State of the Union Thursday edition. Almost said State of the State. You know, I was once a fine guest at a State of the State address. Tom, did I ever tell you that? This was
where?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin? Yeah.
Where do you think I was getting invited?
Well, I know you lived down south for a while, and I know you're a little Huber for a while. I mean, I don't know what your circumstances were.
Yes, they brought me in from day jail to sit at the State of the State address. This predates, this might shock you, this predates Tony Evers. I have not been to a State of the State as the guest of Tony, and it predates the wanker, because I don't care if I walked on water and saved kids from a burning building, wanker wasn't going to invite me.
Never, no.
But under Jim Doyle. I was there, Jim Doyle, the autism mandate, and I wasn't fan, but Jim Doyle used some of his political capital pushing through the autism mandate that affected my family greatly, and he put me in his gallery. And my only regret, Dom, I wasn't wearing a suit. I was wearing like a turtleneck, no ball cap. You know, it's like a weird look for me. It wasn't a normal day. And so, like, I'm up there, and I'm like, hi. You know, because they bring attention to you at some point. They point at you and like, hey, look at that doorknob.
Hey, right.
At least when you're there as the governor.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I've always, you know, they always say to you, never chew gum when you're on camera. I thought to myself, oh, the hell with that. I get a cotton mouth. I got to chew some gum. And then I saw myself on camera chewing gum, and then I never did that again. So, yeah, always wear a suit, Curdy. Come on.
We should wear one during this radio product.
Do we got Jim? Is Jim with us? All right, we got Jim.
Oh, look at him. Excellent. He's got at least a sport coat on. See, yeah, he's dressed for the part.
Stylist.
No tie today, but sport coat.
Always looking
dressed different. For you.
Jim, you should have worn a rock and roll t-shirt. Dress for the job you want, not the job you got.
There you go.
I want to be a roadie. That's my goal in life.
I always get the best vocational advice from this radio program.
Yeah. Wisconsin needs welders, Jim.
To give out career advice, Jim. I got to be honest.
Follow us into the high-paying field of radio, Jim. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, current attorney at law, and host of The Morning Cannoli, unless you've renamed it.
Not quite yet. We're coming in that direction, and some modest revisions, not to content, but just a sort of style and approach.
Excellent.
Well, as long as you're working on it. Working title, Morning Cannoli. Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 on the Civic Media Network. Our friend Jim, thanks for joining us. Let's get to some local news first and foremost, Jim. Started way back at 3 o'clock. We've expanded 3 hours each weekday. Talking about Ron Johnson, the senator from Wisconsin, still denying foreknowledge that he was passing the fake electors on to the vice president, that that is what he had been asked to do. But we've seen releases, this document dump, the Jim Troupas, Kenneth Cheeseboro document dump, that would seem to indicate that he was briefed on the whole plan, soup to nuts, certainly on the vice presidential part, a month prior. And we've seen other texts at minimum that would seem to imply Ron was well informed of what it was he was perpetrating. Jim, I know some of this new news, but do you see criminality perhaps in the actions of our senior U.S. senator?
A couple of observations about this. Of course, we don't know precisely the entire landscape here, but it certainly becomes more clear, especially with this recent release of information, the Troupas emails, the Chesbro emails, all of that, again, confirming this plan that developed right here in Wisconsin, that had a lot of tendrils plainly beyond Wisconsin, throughout the United States of America, and as you just indicated, an awful lot of indication that it was not just those two, it's not just the fake electors, but that our senior senator was involved at a minimum, with an information base. Now, under the law, is simply knowing about something a crime? Typically not. But as we've discussed before, you may be a part of a conspiracy, you could be a part of an aiding and abetting entity, and you don't have to be part of every single aspect of that. If you've done something yourself to advance the purpose of accomplishing an illegal or criminal end, you yourself can be held culpable. And so while it's too early right now to say whether or not our senior senator is going to be in that category, again, the more and more we see about this, the more revelations are, it's suggesting that he is a part of this group that plainly had the intention to do what? The same kinds of things that Jack Smith is charged against Donald Trump. And again, when it gets to trial, if it should on this package of information or anything else that may be out there, there are some great jury instructions that talk about the involvement of people who, again, are not maybe the principal movers and shakers, but nonetheless did something. And significantly, the fact that juries and fact finders can impute knowledge, can impute involvement, and can ascribe intent based upon the things that in common sense suggest that should be the result.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours. Jim, what if you were wanting to help out in furtherance of the conspiracy, but you were unsuccessful in your efforts? Does that still make you culpable to the greater conspiracy?
What a great question. Law school criminality 101 and constitutional law and constitutional procedure, all kinds of things. The answer is no. If the three of us here on public radio here in the public domain begin to discuss and put together an agreement to violate the law, and we undertake one what's called an overt act in furtherance of that, it doesn't even have to be criminal in its nature. If we agree to do something, the purpose of it, which is criminal, and we do one thing to advance that, we have committed a crime. If, in fact, we're conspiring to rob a bank, but we don't do that in the end, but we've got that agreement, we do one thing like buy masks, buy bags, buy a car, get a car arranged, that sort of thing, we are still responsible for that. And the law does not require it, and does not require that the actual event that was intended happen. It is enough to agree to it. It's enough to be a part of it, and again, have been involved in some way in this singular event or more that move it forward.
Jim Santel, let me ask you then the earlier question, the fake elector scheme. What we know in the public reporting, Jim, do you see criminality in that fake elector scheme from Cheeseboro to Andrew Hitt and the other participants here in the state of Wisconsin? Do you see criminality there, sir?
The answer is yes. And on this fine radio station, back in the fall of this past year, we spent a good deal of time on a Saturday morning broadcast outlining in detail the specific statutes that under the Wisconsin law, the specific Wisconsin criminal statutes that could be invoked. There are four or five or six of them, including conspiracy, including these kinds of things involving aiding and abetting, other things that kind of support a criminal enterprise. We talked about them at great length. We talked about the way in which the facts of this case could be welded and moved neatly into a prosecution based upon those statutes. And it would not just focus upon the fake electors themselves, although that could be the core of it. But anybody else, again, as our discussion here today indicates, anybody else who is supporting it, aiding it, abetting it, a part of a conspiracy. I would reference, if you will, immodestly, the show that we did back in the fall that describes that in detail and provides a way forward to prosecute that case here in the state of Wisconsin.
Counselor, I want to make a confession on behalf of the panel. Dom goes to lots of concerts. He doesn't get up and listen to the morning cannolis on Saturday. Our fine guest, he is Jim Santel. Jim, appreciate you coming around. Kenneth Cheeseborough, his participation and the contradictory evidence that he's apparently given in the Nevada testimony and the Michigan testimony, and he claimed he didn't have a social media account, but he did. And we've seen reporting from this document dump that part of what he wrote way back at the beginning is it really doesn't matter if litigation is still pending or not. We are going to use, I believe his words were, the cloud of confusion. And I saw a columnist this week called the cloud of deceit. It was effectively, this is just a plan for any means necessary. Do I have that right, Counselor?
Absolutely. The reporting on this, again, just this past week, again, looking at the New York Times, other reporting here locally, suggested just that. It is revealing, again, putting the criminality to one side, the legality to one side, this notion that we know, we acknowledge that indeed there's no real there substantively, but our purpose in doing this is to do just that, to confuse the electorate, to make a mess of things, to prompt people to think that indeed the election was stolen, that there was something horrific that happened here, and therefore, by the very process of doing that, accomplish our end. Not because it's substantively supported, but throwing so much, if you will, on the wall, hoping that that will happen. I think that's exactly what the reporting, the release now of these documents recently in the civil process has pretty much confirmed in terms of their purpose and their intent. We knew before about Chesbrough's authoring these memorandums. One of them is called the Wisconsin Memorandum, but this gives even more weight, if you will, to that notion that they knew from the start this was ridiculous, this was frivolous, and we're doing it simply to cause chaos.
Does the House of Cards crash on Cheeseborough? I can give you 30 seconds, Counselor.
Sure. It certainly already has in Georgia. Should in other places, frankly, including right here in Wisconsin. Lots of people looking at him, and he's got lots of criminal culpability there to be exposed.
Jim, I think the former president's got some criminal culpability out there in the world as well. Let's come back and talk about it. Our good friend, James Santel, get up early on Saturdays. Don't be like Dom. Listen to the morning cannolis.
My lack of involvement was seconds worth of texting.
The Devil's Advocates, tackling the issues you're not allowed to talk about at the dinner table.
Yeah, thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Morning Cannoli here on the Civic Media Network on Saturdays. Sticking around for at least one more segment. Jim, thank you for doing so. Appreciate it. I know we're going to get to some of the Trump travails, but I want to circle back briefly on the Ron Johnson situation. Yes. That we have greater insight as to the efforts of the conspiracy and Ron's involvement because of a civil case that was settled and this information had to be released. Well, and Ron's out there right now, not under oath, claiming I had no idea. Although in the reporting, it specifically says from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that although he said he had no idea that the documents were for false electoral paperwork, these texts released show that the Trump attorney Troupas asked him urgency to deliver a document on the Wisconsin electors shortly before Congress convened on January 6th. So Ron Johnson's out here in the public, seemingly contradicting what is in the factual record based on the civil case. My question to you, Jim, I mean, how do we get a criminal case out of this? I mean, did the Attorney General Josh Call not have access to this kind of information until right now, until this was released from a civil case? I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on that effort.
Yeah, it is curious, and we don't know. Our attorney general has said he's neither confirming nor denying the existence of an investigation here. We don't know what he has had. He's been very, very quiet about this. I've commented publicly with you and others on this notion because there's such a dramatic public interest in this. This is one of those times when Department of Justice, federal in the state system, can in fact go outside its normal policy and provide the community with some information to suggest, yes, indeed, we're looking at this. You may not want to disclose exactly what you've got, whether it's from another source or your own criminal investigative pursuit, but just to let us know, he has not done that. And so we don't know. And it's a concern, I think, for anybody who's looking at where we are, where Wisconsin is more generally. Also wanted to follow up on your good question, Dom, and say, you know, there's also great jury instruction that says just this, that even though you may not have what we typically call sort of a smoking gun, an arrow that points directly to somebody's involvement and an admission, that kind of thing, there's a great jury instruction that always is read, civil cases, criminal cases, to juries, finders of fact, that says, use your common sense. Do not check that at the courthouse door. If all the things around the particular event suggest to you that this person has knowledge, you can find that there's knowledge. And it's not just circumstantial. People often say, well, gee, it's circumstantial evidence. There's no direct evidence. Circumstantial evidence is as compelling as is direct evidence. And it's just a matter of how much there is and how compelling that evidence is. Just because it's not a smoking gun, a fire, that sort of thing that's down the street, doesn't mean that juries cannot impute, as I said before, come to the rational inference that they would normally engage in their own common sense lives.
James Santel, our fine guest, Jim, Stormy Daniels. We could have gotten to the bottom of this. I think 2018, Ron Johnson came down to Brady Street at that time, and I'm going to get to motive here. We asked Ron Johnson, we said, Ron, contrast, if this was Barack Obama's, you know, mistress, allegedly, this Stormy Daniels, you'd be screaming, Stormy, 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 from the rooftops. And Ron literally gave us the Sergeant Schultz, oh, you boys are too young to remember, but I know nothing. That was his literal answer, a willingness to cover up. Because as we pointed out in real time, he had subpoena power. He had a gavel. He was the chairman of the HISGAC. He could have gotten to the bottom of the alleged election engineering, the cover up that really was to keep the Access Hollywood tape from multiplying into a loss for him. So, Jim, Stormy Daniels, I didn't want to talk about the sex crimes, but this is the best we got, man. Is Stormy Daniels going to take down the former president?
I think it's a compelling case. It really is. I know people have had a tradition here of saying, well, this is the weakest one. This is the one that's most salacious and therefore less significant. I think we were talking a week or so, you and I, Dom, about the fact that this is not just that. I referred to it as Donald Trump's origin story. And yes, indeed, as an aside, Ron Johnson was in a position at that time through the oversight powers of the committee for which he was the chair to conduct an investigation, as you said, subpoena power, compel people in, can't prosecute criminally, but certainly can do all those things that Congress under the Constitution can do. He had the authority to do that. That never happened. I'll also take another shot at my own Department of Justice under, again, another administration that also was pursuing this whole issue in the Southern District of New York. That was dropped under Bill Barr. And now we finally have Alvin Bragg, who's looking at all this, and yes, has returned this indictment, these charges that again are based upon the catch and kill, the arrangements involving Michael Cohen. I think the evidence is fairly compelling. There's some great reporting out there now about the kinds of things that Alvin Bragg is going to be talking about to address that issue and talk about how this is more than just paying off a porn star. This is more than just Michael Cohen, who again is a very damaged witness. This guy is not compelling just standing alone, but there's an awful lot of corroborating information to suggest that yes, indeed, he was the conduit, that he was paid off. The receipts were intended to cover up the fact that these monies had been paid to Stormy Daniels and McDougal. That evidence, I think, is straightforward enough for a jury to understand, but it's also going to be put, as we were indicating today, in the context of this larger issue, which is this was election interference too. This may have been the first iteration of it. This may have been the first chapter of it. And therefore, it's not just this insignificant throwaway case. And it could, in fact, result in the singular criminal conviction of Donald Trump before the election in November. We'll see.
Jim, $83.3 million due this week. Doesn't seem like the former president can make bond. E. Jean Carroll's got every right to start seizing assets. Jim, what's that look like?
It looks ugly. It looks ugly, and it often is ugly. And it is just pretty much as the reporting out there indicates. Whether you're in bankruptcy court, and certainly here, again, Donald Trump is not in bankruptcy court, but when you cannot pay your bills, there is civil process. Again, it's not criminal. We don't have debtors' prisons in this country. We don't put people in jail because they haven't paid their bills. But what do? We seize assets. We foreclose on properties. We grab bank assets, all those kinds of things. In New York, there's a process for doing it. I've never done it because I practice here in Wisconsin. But there's a process for doing that, to begin to grab the stuff that Donald Trump has, to liquidate it, and to begin to pay off this whopping fine.
And
fines,
that's
plural, I should say.
And that's before you get to the other one. What if he can't make these bonds? Do you expect Letitia James to go try to seize Trump Tower?
I think she will. I think she will. And again, this is not a woman who has been at all reluctant to do what she can do under the law. And for that reason, I think you will see her being very aggressive. She's also talked about, you know, the building right across the street from where she is in the attorney general's office. She is going to go after this, and more headlines coming out when Donald Trump's empire begins to get chipped away, because he's not going to make this bond, not be able to pay any of these judgments out there, including the valuations judgment either.
James Santel, you got one more segment in you. You don't have to do any live radio again till Saturday morning, 9 to 11 on the morning cannoli. Jim, we're gonna ring you out, put you away wet here. More Devil's Advocates, more of our good friend James Santel, a valuable, insightful guest. So we're gonna make him work overtime. Come on back.
I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for those meddling devil's advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We got a fine guest. He is James Santel. We are in the happy hour, rolling through it, right up into the Badger game in some markets. State of the Union address, President Joe Biden. Coverage here from Civic Media, hosted by Maggie Dawn and Stuart Waddle. Jim, I got to ask you, you're going to watch the State of the Union address, do your civic duty, or you like them, you're going to read the transcript tomorrow?
You know, there's nothing like watching it live, or at least in the replay, maybe at midnight or so, just because of the immediacy of this very important event, obviously, in our nation's history. It's in the Constitution that the president is supposed to provide a report to Congress annually, so that's part of his obligations under the second article of the Constitution. But that interplay, remember very notably last year that there was direct interplay between the president and some so-called hecklers in the crowd of members of the Congress. We'll see if that happens again. I think that the heat is still up, obviously, on things like reproductive rights, this issue coming out of Alabama having to do with the finding by the Supreme Court there that embryos are in fact lives and their children. He's going to bring that up. He's going to talk about the woman who had to leave Texas to get an abortion because of the incredibly restrictive legislative action there as well. And also obviously talk about overseas, Gaza, Ukraine, those kinds of things. But a lot of these things do have direct involvement with the law, the rule of law, and the administration of justice. And he is going to make them very practical tonight.
Jim, probably the biggest audience of the year. So far, no presidential debates, although I saw Trump today challenging Joe to a debate anywhere, anytime. But this is the biggest predictable bully pulpit this president will have for the rest of the year. How important do you think the issue of small d democracy? And obviously, it's a campaign year, Jim. He's got an opponent, but I would say in part, what Trump is representative of is the greater opponent, because it's not just Trump. It's a whole party willing to cast democracy aside if that's what it takes. Do you think he speaks to that, Jim?
I do. I'll be very interested to see if he actually uses Donald Trump's name. I suspect he probably won't, but it'll be unmistakably clear who he's talking about. And we'll also be talking about the very people who are sitting in front of him, right? Not only in terms of legislative things, I suspect we're also going to hear an awful lot about this immigration deal, which was within inches of passing. And then you had the, not a majority, but the people who are apparently in charge, nixing the deal in the House. He's going to talk about that. On the small D issue, absolutely. You talk about things like the reliance upon, even though we don't always like it, upon courts to resolve things. That could also be a sort of an interesting double entendre if he talks about civil litigation, the importance of that, and criminal prosecutions, and the reason why those are out there because we're concerned about our safety and security as a nation. He can talk about that as well. Can talk about voting, which again, we're going to do here again in Wisconsin in August, in April, in August, again in November, and the significant failure, if you will, of the Congress to address some of the previous Supreme Court cases that chipped away at the Voting Rights Act. He can talk about those kinds of things, can talk about poll workers too, the significance of their involvement, the threats that are being made right now, not only to poll workers, people doing that work, but threats more generally against our justice system, judges, members of the staff, jurors, witnesses, all those kinds of things. He can talk about all of that. It is broad. There's a lot going on there, but with a good deal of articulate writing, which I assume is done now, maybe being refined right now by his staff, he can put that front and center on the stage of America tonight and explain to them that he supports all those things that do promote justice and bring safety and security. And there are forces out there, without naming them by name, who are going in just the opposite direction. I think he'll spend some time doing that. You recall he had this major speech a number of months ago in which he talked just about that. It was the subject of some criticism out there because of its so-called darkness. I didn't find it that at all. But I think with the right spirit tonight, he can resurrect that same theme and go with it again and bring it home.
A mix of optimism and concern, perhaps. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, our friend. Pardon me. He may not, pardon me, may not mention Donald Trump, but Donald Trump's going to be sitting in the courtroom here real soon, Jim. The Alvin Bragg case starts in a couple of weeks, and my understanding, the judge initially thought this was going to take 6 weeks. This is a criminal trial, Jim. Donald Trump has to be present for the entirety of this trial.
That's exactly right. And this is why these are different from the civil cases where, again, he was coming and going in the E. Jean Carroll matter, coming and going in the New York matter, all these other cases out there. He has an obligation in criminal matters because he is the defendant. There are charges pending against him. He is obliged to be there. And so he'll be obliged not only to sit there through jury instructions. One of the reasons why this is going to take 6 weeks, you got to find a jury, you got to impanel them. You don't have to ask the question, have you ever heard of Donald Trump? Just simply have to find jurors who can bring whatever they think about Donald Trump and put that to one side and, based upon the things they hear in trial, make their decision. Still, that's going to take a while. The presentation of the case is presumably weeks. Donald Trump has no obligation to defend the case by presenting testimony. Fascinating to see whether he will take the stand. If he does, he waives his Fifth Amendment right. He's subject to cross-examination by Alvin Bragg. You know, get the popcorn perking for that, right? And then the other part of this, of course, which is implicit in your comment and question, Dom, is we've got other trials. Again, presuming that the Supreme Court does in fact send that immunity thing back to Tanya Chutkan in June or so, let's suppose that in, I don't know, September or so, she can get this back on trial. It is not an unrealistic possibility that case could begin sometime in the fall. And whether it's in the midst of the last weeks of the election, September, October, there's a possibility that election day, when we're deciding whether Donald Trump will be the next president, he could also be obliged to be sitting in a courtroom in Washington, D.C. That is not a completely frivolous possibility. What a year we're living in.
What about the Eileen Cannon case, Jim Santel? The federal charges, the paperwork crimes, as I've sometimes described them, but classified documents charged in Palm Beach County, close to home for Trump. That's where apparently the crime committed, and that's where he was holding them in the spare bathroom. Eileen Cannon had shown some deference to some amicus briefs, and it acted like these had some positive sway. These amicus briefs came from a couple of Trump allies. Is she getting ready to try and dismiss these charges, Jim? I mean, that'd be ballsy. Excuse my coarseness.
There is legal language that also conveys the same thing. And the answer is, we don't know precisely what's in her head. We know that she has been chastised already by the 11th Circuit, which is not exactly the most liberal circuit in the country, and said you're wrong when it came to her trying to shut down, at least stop the movement forward of the investigation. And she's also done some things having to do with witnesses and also the national security documents that have got Jack Smith very concerned. She withdrew one of her opinions when it became clear that she was applying the wrong legal standard, called it to her attention, said, no, Eileen, you got it wrong. She withdrew that and perhaps kept herself out of the 11th Circuit again. But Jack Smith is coming very close, I think, in two areas. One is to appealing her if, in fact, she were to decide wrongly on some of these cases involving the witness security and disclosure of information about them and national security documents, could take her up to the 11th Circuit, where the law, again, is relatively clear, could get her smacked down again, if you will. That is the legal term for it. And that could happen. Or he could also seek to have her recused. And again, that's a bigger issue, if you will. But all those things are possible. Boy, if she were to grant a motion to dismiss, yes, then there will be more action by Jack Smith and by the special counsel's office in direct response to that.
Jim Sentell, Fani Willis has been through a public muckraking. And my understanding is Fulton County has declined to bring up ethical questions in their public meeting. I know there was another hearing in addition to Judge McAfee's hearing. He's supposed to give us some sort of ruling whether or not she should be disqualified next week. Jim, it's my inclination based on his questioning. I watched hours. He seemed quite thoughtful. The standard for disqualification seemingly falls entirely on the defense. He talked a lot about the preponderance of evidence, and I don't think they've met that standard. Does that mean she goes forward with the prosecution, or has this thing been damaged, this prosecution down in Fulton County?
I think there's a difference between the legal implications of what hopefully Judge Scott McAfee will do. I agree with you entirely. Not only in his demeanor, I think he's been giving the singular defendant who's been carrying water for the others an awful lot of leeway to have this hearing and have all these witnesses forward. He's creating a good record, if you will. I'd like to think he's bright enough, and I think he is bright enough to determine that, yes, under Georgia law, this is not a basis for throwing her off the case. Georgia law basically says if you screw around with the forensic stuff, you make up documents, you somehow affect witnesses, or in fact, there's truly a conflict between who you are and what you're doing and the prosecution, which is not here. Therefore, I think you will find, as you just indicated, not a showing, nowhere near the required burden by this particular defendant that she should be thrown off. And so I would like to think that he will shortly tell us that she remains on the case. This, again, goes back to the things that Donald Trump does in America. Look what he's done in that case. He's got us all talking about Fani Willis and not about him. He's got Fani Willis on the stand. People are referring to her as the defendant. Oh my gosh, just the opposite of what's going on here. And so again, as I listen to those hearings and digest them, those were days, even though he's not going to be successful, I think, Donald Trump or the singular defendant brought the motion in getting her off the case. In the public domain, this case is damaged with a small D. She will go ahead. She can resurrect this. She can go forward. We know this is also a case that's not going to be tried before the election. It's huge. Even if it somehow starts, it's not going to be finished by that time. So she can go forward. And yes, indeed, she can overcome this. But this is a small V victory for Donald Trump. Even the fact that he's got all this attention and, gosh, he's got the prosecutor on the stand in a case in which he himself is the defendant. It's just the opposite of what you would think. She is not charged with anything, as she said. And so in the public domain arena, if you will, I think he was successful in doing what he needed to do here, what he wanted to do. It's an embarrassment. I understand why Judge McAfee entertained it. I hope that his opinion is as decisive as it can possibly be in putting this to a conclusion. And we've got some good sound bites coming out of his order that make it very clear that there's no there there, and this case should go on under her leadership.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, our friend, just a couple more minutes here, Jim, as we do the Trump trials loop and we come back north to Manhattan. Yes. Alan Weisselberg pleaded guilty once again. Now, this was done by Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg, but it was regarding the other case. And I do recall that Cohen, who could be, will be perhaps a witness in this particular case in Manhattan, the Stormy Daniels and the You Don't Know What a Write-Off Jerry case is. Cohen, in the recording, mentioned Weisselberg and, hey, we set up this LLC, da-da-da-da-da. My understanding also, Jim, is that Weisselberg is not required to testify in any of these cases and will do his time. What's your sense on that? Does that add or take away from the Manhattan case?
Sure. It probably is one of those situations where, again, Alvin Bragg is assessing the importance of all of these witnesses. Like Michael Cohen, Weisselberg was damaged from the start. He's now got this additional perjury prosecution hanging around his neck. He's going to spend more months in jail. And that, again, based upon his testimony in the case in front of Judge Engeron. That is the state valuations case. Are we keeping this all straight? It also underscores, of course, is there anybody inside the Trump organization who has not been subject to challenges and perjury prosecutions? So Alan Bragg's got to decide, right? He's probably got to call Michael Cohen, who's a damaged witness. He doesn't want to have all damaged witnesses on the stand. And I think it's almost a strategic matter about whether or not he wants to put out this cavalcade of Trump people, all of whom have lied and have deceived, and ask the jury then to believe them on this other set of things. That's a strategic issue he's got to decide.
Excellent guesting, James Santel. I'll look forward to getting up and listening on Saturday morning. Dom will sleep in, but the morning cannoli until otherwise named, it's enjoyable, it's informative, and it's hosted by James Santel, Saturdays, 9 to 11. More Devils. We still have
Thank you, Jim.
8 more minutes.
Take care, gentlemen.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show, our last spot of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up on the lines right now, 844-967-2789. Stick around. Busted Pencils coming up next.
Dom, want to thank our most recent guest. What a fine friend he is, James Santel, former U.S. attorney. The morning, cannoli, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11, until otherwise named. They're keeping it a mystery, being very coy. Like the
okay, all right. Well,
Republicans.
Jim's a good guy. Listen to his show.
Yes, please do. Unlike Dom. The Republicans being very coy about who their guests will be for the State of the Union address. It's almost like they want to sneak people in there. Don't they have to go through Secret Service? I mean, they don't have to tell the press.
But well, I mean, this is
what is this coyness?
When you say they're being coy, like what are you talking about? Like Ron Johnson's not telling people who's bringing, and
or any of the Republicans.
Taylor Greene, no one's telling anyone who they're bringing.
So far, I at least in regards to the Wisconsin congressional delegation, no announced guest on the Republican side, none. Every Democrat, of course, has their guest. And now the Republicans have introduced anyone. I mean, if you're going to honor a constituent, if you're going to drag someone out to D.C. for a speech, you know, the Kabuki theater that is the State of the Union address. I mean, wouldn't you want to tell the local media people so they could be so honored, right?
If that was your intent, if it wasn't to be meant to be used as a prop, perhaps you'd let people know this is what we're doing. This is who we're bringing. This is why we're doing it. And this is why we think it's important. And we honor our constituents. Sure.
Well, Waukesha.
And it seems like a prop to me.
Waukesha Police Chief Thompson will be the guest of Tammy Baldwin. For example, he's not hiding from this. They put an op-ed out together. They picked an issue. They found common ground. They put it out there. That's what you do. You pretend like we're not going to go and throw cherry bombs at the president during a speech, but we brought some cherry bombs. I think these Republicans have nothing but malfeasance planned, and I think they'd be too embarrassed to be seen with their constituents or vice versa. So I wouldn't be surprised if there are a lot of empty seats because these Republicans don't bring guests. What do you think of my conspiracy theory, Dom? Because they're just there to try and what? Trip up Joe Biden, throw spit wads, interrupt them, heckle them, boo, give them the old Marjorie Taylor Greene. I think it's
Michael, you going know to very devolve. Well, that Speaker Mike Johnson has specifically asked the Republicans to turn the temperature down during the State of the Union. So we got that going for us, which is nice.
I'm going to be drinking double, triple doubles, perhaps. Kobe Bryant specials. First, I'm going to watch the Badger game. That tips off in like 6 minutes. Tune in on the Civic Media Network. That'd be
is that last game of the year? I mean, what
last is home game on home the game. Okay. Senior night. Okay. Tyler Wahl, the senior on the
oh, nice.
So Tyler Wahl, like the guy, kid played 156 ball games. I mean, he's like a ninth year senior with the whole COVID and the bonus years. I swear to God, this guy's kid's getting ready for college. You know,
is he the mass comm degree? What's going on here?
That does take a while. You know, if you work full time in college, Dom, you know, work in the public.
People do that?
Well, some did. Some worked outside the home. You worked inside.
I worked inside the home. Yeah.
So I've heard. So I look forward to the Badger game. Let's sneak a couple of callers in. Although, you know, CJ is in the queue. So against my better judgment, we'll put him on the back burner and take Mark. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, Mark. All right. What's going on, Mark?
Doing great, guys. Yeah, I found a. I do not say take except. I took notice of the song you were playing on the walk in today from the break. That Take a Walk on the Wild Side. You know, that song would freak people out down in the Band the Books crowd, and the Mothers, Moms for Liberty. That directly refers to something, and it occurs to me thinking about that. Think of all those old Bob Hope movies, where he and was it Bing Crosby or. You know, that they're across
or Some Like It Hot, man, right? And Some Like It Hot.
Or Rudy and Trump dream. Back in the 80s doing the cross-dressing thing.
Yeah, or yeah.
They had a TV show, Bosom Buddies, right? Tom Hanks.
Come on, man. Bugs Bunny would be in drag. So what, people?
You know, it is just ridiculous that these people freak out about that kind of thing. And Mike Johnson was brought up the whole, he brought Brave New World. They go, oh, that's a book that they would have banned. You know, Moms of Liberty would have got banned. That book by Aldous Huxley that I read when I was in eighth grade, I think. That you know was a
well,
book.
Well, look
on
how
the
you turned out, Mark. I mean, maybe they got a point.
I guess so.
Be well, Mark. Got a few more to get to. 844-967-2789. Wisco Paul, how you doing, fella?
Hey, Paulie.
Hey, afternoon, boys. The State of the Union address has turned into like a Super Bowl commercial, kind of, where you wait to see what Republican is going to embarrass the country more.
Well, it can't be any worse than J-Lo's husband, Ben Affleck, and the whole Dunkin' Donuts thing. I mean, the fact that Matt Damon and Tom Brady got dragged along on that, they must have paid those guys lots of money. You know, it would be nice if the Congress people, as they sat there in the chamber, if they had to wear, like, their sponsors, you know, like on their sport coats, if they had to wear, like, you know, sponsored by the petroleum industry, Wisco. Right. You know, they look like the flame suits from the race car drivers, just covered in the patches.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, just like the NASCAR drivers, covered in patches, you can hardly see the person. But the whole thing I find amazing. And the other thing is, I hope to God Biden does a good job tonight, because if any glitch appears, you're never going to hear the end of it on radio. So, and with that, thanks for your show today, boys. Have a great one.
All right. Thank you, Paul, man. Appreciate it. And listen, you know, don't worry about what the Republicans and the MAGAs are going to think. They're going to be critical. I mean, there's no chance in hell that they're going to stand up and say, wow, you know what? That Joe, he was on point. He was on target. He was sharp. He was witty. He was empathetic. He's the guy. He really knows what's going on. They're not going to do that. Well, we need to see what I want to see. I'll judge for myself, and I'll make that determination, because, you know, I'm doing it for me, and everyone has to do that for themselves. Don't worry about what Meg is going to do. Meg is Mega.
Dom, you're going to the concert. Who are you kidding? Here,
I'll watch it later.
the independents, those that are just tuning in right now, because the general started on Wednesday. So the most important speech of the year for Joe Biden, you can hear it here on the Civic Media Network after, I hope it's after the Badger game. Badgers tipping off in just a couple minutes. Go Bucky, beat Rutgers, and then tune in for Joe Biden with the incomparable Maggie Dawn and Stuart Waddle. All the coverage you need right here, Civic Media Network. You know, thank you. You're welcome from the Devil's Advocates. I know, 10 seconds.
Matt texted me, or